Good, we're welcoming the sun back here. I'd like to ask for your attention again. Before we do meditation exercises, some further explanation to those four Brahma Viharas, four immeasurables, since they are important. I said in the first evening that the most basic form of these Brahma Viharas mean that they are part of the human heart, that they cannot be lost. Yeah. Historically, the Buddhist tradition, particularly Theravada Buddhism, has made something different out of these Brahma Viharas. They were not understood to be so much foundational qualities of the heart, but they were more understood to be meditation exercises. And also they were understood to be the entry path to samatha, to practice of stillness. Particularly the commentarial tradition has given a lot of weight and emphasis on the Brahma Vihara teaching on that level. But if we look closely at the Buddhist teachings, then we see that this is not the case. I would like to distinguish four different levels where Brahma Viharas occur. Firstly, it's the point I mentioned on Thursday evening. The Brahma Viharas as the inbuilt qualities of the human heart, the inbuilt quality of relational empathy. Attuned relational empathy in differing tones. The first tone is the tone of friendliness, connecting. The term Maitri doesn't actually come from love, it comes from friendship. The second one, relational attunement, is about pain. It's connecting with the suffering and the pain in somebody else's life. The third one, very similar, but this time is about connecting with the joyous aspect, with the aspect of success, with that which is good in somebody else's life. The old English word rejoicing is probably the most appropriate term. It's a resonance for the joy, the success, the goodness in somebody else's life. The fourth one, one of the most misunderstood qualities in Buddhist teaching is upekkha. And this means you are still in relationship, but you are resting in yourself. You are equanimous. You're neither going in nor going away. You're letting somebody else completely be entirely in their own self-responsibility. And you're still connected. It's not, I don't care. It's you do care. But you are letting somebody else stand in their independence. The term upekkha comes from upaikshati, which means to look across or look over. It implies a concept of impartiality. Was ist das? Unparteilichkeit.
Imiflakti.
Chasar pniot. Okay. Impartiality. That's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it is serenity.
Alitzut.
Alitzut. That's another.
Chedvat nefesh, bli siba.
You get it? Chedvat nefesh? Please. I'm having fun with this. So serenity is one of the components of upekkha. Impartiality is one of the components of upekkha. And whatever you do, do not forget that all upekkha is still a relational aspect. It's still something to do with relationship. It doesn't mean I don't need to relate anymore. That's why I'm unshakable. It means I am willing to relate. I am capable of being connected. So, we have, on the foundational level, qualities of the heart that cannot be lost. They may be not developed, they may be forgotten, they may be occluded, but they're there. Yeah? At the other end, the four Brahma Viharas are the expression of an awakened mind. Yeah? So if you know any enlightened people, this is how they're expected to behave. Yeah? They're expected to love, they're expected to be friendly, they're expected to be compassionate, they're expected to be joyous, and they're capable of equanimity. If you know people who are enlightened who are not like that, I have great doubts. Yeah? So, you have something that cannot be lost at the bottom part, and something that is the expression of a completely freed human being, free of all afflictions, man or woman, doesn't matter. Free of all afflictions, that's the expression. So, in between, you have the Brahma Viharas as virtues. We haven't spoken about this yet. Brahma Viharas as expressions of the human heart in relationship with others. A virtue is something you can do. Yeah, that's the great thing about virtues. What is a virtue in Hebrew?
Midah.
Okay. So, virtues are things you can recognize in others and in yourself. You can admire it. Yeah? You can say, oh, I don't have that, but you have that. This is good, wonderful. Yeah? Virtues are something you can strengthen. You can affirm. And you can train. The big thing about virtues is you can train them. So the Brahma Viharas are clearly recommended by the Buddha that we spend as much time in our lives, in our relationship, in and out of meditation, in these four Brahma Viharas. Sometimes it is more appropriate to be immediately friendly and loving. Sometimes it is more appropriate to be resonant with the pain aspect in others' life and trying to relate to that pain, trying to diminish the other's pain or ameliorate their conditions, or simply enable them to hold that pain. Yeah, so there we have to be careful that we do not react to the pain. Sometimes we react to the pain of others by shutting ourselves off. Yeah. Dissociation is one. Numbing out. Yeah. Going into info binges, alcohol binges, work binges, entertainment binges, you know. This just about every activity under the sun human beings can use to dissociate from what they do. Yeah. So dissociation doesn't always mean just turning into a zombie, spacing out and going into a sort of stuporific mode. Sometimes dissociation looks quite active. Sometimes people dissociate by over-focusing on one particular aspect of their life and not feeling other aspects. Yeah. Work is the classic drug. Yeah. Sex, yeah, but you can only do so much of it. But work, you know, you can really do a lot more than you can do sex. Yeah. So it's also praised a lot more. Yeah. The Buddha clearly emphasized, as the basis of societal harmony, as the basis of well-being in our relational life, these four Brahma Viharas, that we spend as much time in these four paradigms of mind. If you're a worker and in a working situation, you will see that a climate in which these four Brahma Viharas prevail is a climate in which people find it a lot easier to learn, a lot easier to trust, a lot easier to develop. Yeah. So we all respond to Brahma Viharas at the receiving end. So we're quite appreciative if people treat us with those Brahma Viharas. Sometimes it's more difficult to actually produce them. Yeah. And that's where the Brahma Vihara practice comes in. Brahma Vihara practice is not just trying to feel this state. It's very specifically looking at what hinders me to feel this state. Much of Brahma Vihara practice is how it happens that I am not in one of these Brahma Viharas. In other words, investigating the hindrances, investigating what stops me from relationship. That's why I told you yesterday morning the enemies, the near and the far enemies, yeah, because they tell us something about what stops us from experiencing these Brahma Viharas. And much of Brahma Vihara practice is actually hard. Yeah, it doesn't feel necessarily good to get into connection with what stops me from relating more deeply, more lovingly, more compassionately, more joyously, more equanimously. So the list of things that stop us from such relationship is not very long. It's easily enumerated. Pain is one of the things that stops us from living Brahma Viharas. When we experience pain, both physical and emotional, we tend to contract. And every contracting movement stops the empathetic connection to others. Under the influence of pain, we can be callous, we can be selfish, our world can shrivel. This is not difficult to understand. The other three are greed. Yeah, pleasure seeking can make me very selfish, very disconnected, very isolated in ways, you know, validating only my gratification, my wish, my ambition, my need, my desires, and thereby I can lose connection with others or create pain for others. So desire. Then the next big one is anger. Not surprisingly, when I'm angry, I contract, cut off relationship, I caricature you, I reduce you to that thing which makes me angry. Although we're together for 30 years, I look at you and all I see is that thing which makes me angry, and the rest is left out. You know, we all know that anger is a pathological condition. Every anger attack is a mini psychotic episode. If you look what happens to your mind when you're angry, if you clearly and soberly assess the impact on anger on your mind, then you know that you're psychotic at that moment. Believe me, I've practiced enough of this. I know what I'm talking about. And finally, the big fourth one that stops us from connecting and that hinders relationship and that hinders the experience of the Brahma Vihara and empathy is fear. Yeah, that's the big number four. So under the effect of fear, we shrivel. Under the effect of fear, we contract. Under the effect of fear, we are becoming small. We cut off connection. We feel isolated. Yeah, there's a powerfully reinforcing sense of self under the influence of fear. So Buddhist psychology is very clear. All these four. Fear and pain and distortions are lumped together under a term called moha. And the other three, chanda, raga, bhaya, and moha, are the four agatis, yeah, which stop the human mind from engaging in attuned relationship, which hinder our experience of empathetic connection with other beings. So much of Brahma Vihara practice, if you're going to take this on, and you understand, is weakened. This is just a little introduction to this. It just sketches the terrain. Yeah, will entail you looking at what hinders you in experience of Brahma Viharas. You will find bits of yourself that you do instead of doing Brahma Viharas, and very likely that you recognize yourself in one of these patterns: fear pattern, desire pattern, anger pattern, or form of confusion, or form of pain, or form of distorted understanding, which stops you actually from empathetically acknowledge that you're connected to others. Because that's what it is. Bottom line is, you are connected. These Brahma Viharas are the Buddhist way of expressing something very universal. And that universal quality is that we are connected to each other. We are profoundly connected. That means I am not capable of being happy if you are not happy. That's what connection means. It means that if something bad happens to you, I am affected as well. It means I cannot be happy and control my happiness without being at the mercy of circumstances, that if something bad happens to you, it doesn't matter how healthy or how happy or how rich I am also touched. This is a very powerful situation, and many of us feel uneasy about this because there's so much that we are not in control in. Now, it's no secret that even very rich and successful people can be remarkably unhappy. If you know rich and successful people, then you will probably know that this is true. I have met a number of rich and successful people in my life, and some of the most miserable people I've met in my life were rich and successful. So I have personally no doubt that happiness is not something that can be controlled by fortune, success, power, control. And very obviously, we need to do some of this. I wish you all success in what you're doing. I wish you a sense of empowerment so that you can have an influence in the circumstances of your life. I think it is valuable to try to influence and create condition for one's life. That is a developmental task, I believe. But I am so clear that so many circumstances in my life, beyond my control, I depend on. Just think what, you know, what governments can do, what good and what bad, or what families can do, what's good and what bad. Yeah. Really. Or, you know, we all connect with institutions. I've spent a lot of my life in institutions, educational institutions. The institutions I was forced to be part of, and then institutions I have chosen to be part of, and then institutions that I have made a big vocation of in my life. And, you know, institutions generally do some good, but there is also some bad going on, almost in any institution you go in. So we all know that we are connected, and because we are connected, we need to invest ourselves. I don't see any other way in growing than giving, than connecting myself with my energy, my time, my intelligence, my heart, to a cause. I know no other way of making sense of this world. Yeah. So, but if you do so, and if you connect, you find yourself suddenly with people in an institution doing things that you don't want to do, that you don't feel, this is not what we agreed on, you know, 10 years ago. So you need to find a way to make what is important to you and what the institution does come together. And usually that is painful in some point. That makes for some negotiation. So connection is something that is not always easy. As a meditator, these Brahmaviharas translate in my relationship, not just to other people, but also in my relationship to myself, to my own experience. So let me spend a moment on how this could look like as a meditator. How do I relate to my experience in terms of metta? That's where we need to begin. I think I have said something about this. I've tried to look at 5 psychological steps in there. You remember, you know, turning towards, orienting, welcoming, approaching, creating availability, starting to resonate would be psychological steps to practice a form of friendliness to an event, a process, a state in my experience. Sandhya gave a guided meditation yesterday. You will recall that the Brahmavihara practices as exercises in Buddhist teaching start with the formulation of a wish. Yeah, that's the easiest way I can practice a state of mind. I enunciate a wish. I formulate a clear intention, say, may I be well, may others be well. That may sound artificial, it may sound simple and easy, but it's not. It's a powerful first step to start with an intention and make that intention conscious, enunciate that intention. So you're not only thinking it, you're actually hearing it. Yeah? When you do that for a while, this has power. Yeah? Every therapist will know, if people think, I'm a zero. If you do that for a while, you know, you start feeling bad. You get a somatic response. Your liver functions will start show up and your chest will collapse and your mood will change. Yeah? So thoughts have power. Thoughts really have power. And if a thought is charged with intention, you can give that thought the power of that intention. So if the intention is wholesome, this is a way you can make the state begin to blossom in you. You plant a seed with intention, and then you water it with mindfulness, and then the plant will grow. Yeah? So the exercises for metta are simple. You wish others well. The exercises for karuna is that you wish that others may be relieved from pain. The exercises for mudita is that you wish others may experience in a lasting fashion the joys coming from their success and their goodness, so that they may not be separated from the goodness they have created in their lives. And for upekkha, you don't have a wish, but you have a reflection. And this reflection is about conditionality. The conditionality that brings about things in your life has something to do with how you live. It has something to do with what you have been doing with your energies. So it acknowledges karma. Karma as action, not as destiny. Yeah? Karma as action. It acknowledges that things come about through causes. Everything has causes and conditions. Nothing has no cause in this universe. Things don't just happen. I hate this statement, shit happens. You know, you remember the bumper sticker, shit happens. It's meant to say, you know, don't make such a fuss, don't sweat the small fry, you know, get on with life. That's what it is meant to say. But unfortunately, it also says something else. It says, bad things happen and nobody is responsible. Yeah. But that's not true. Things happen because there are causes and conditions. And because there are causes and conditions, there is responsibility. Yeah. There's always somebody there who is in some way responsible. Yeah. So causes and conditions are the basis for growth. Because good things grow with causes and conditions, we can water the conditions. We can bring about the conditions. We can strengthen the conditions. And the fruit will follow. Bad stuff happens and we can identify what are the conditions for this bad stuff. Where does it begin? And we can weaken those conditions. And we can maybe even uproot the conditions. So conditionality is your friend. Yeah. Karma is your friend. It's not a bad rucksack full of bad deeds which you need to live out, you know, and lug through a sad and suffering life, you know, which some bad-tempered God has given you on a grim Sunday morning or so, and he started working again after Shabbat. This is not what karma is. Karma is your choice. You can generate conditions. You can choose by, first of all, putting your attention. Secondly, putting your intention. And by doing this, you start building conditions in a life. Some of these conditions will come to fruition very quickly. Some of them we will have almost instant results. Some of them will take a long time to grow. But these conditions work. That's where freedom is. Creating conditions by choosing where my attention goes and where my intention goes. So the four Brahmaviharas are practices in which I create wholesome conditions for the happiness of this being here and for other beings. You understand it's always the suffering ones who create suffering for other people. Most of the time, suffering and misery in our societies and in other people comes through people who suffer themselves. It's rarely the happy ones which create suffering for others. There are some callously happy ones, you know, who may be so exuberantly happy that they don't quite feel you and may tread on your toes. But most of the suffering in the world comes from people who suffer themselves and who don't know how to hold their own suffering in other ways than acting out. As a meditator, getting in touch with karuna, relating to this experience here with compassion, means I am touching gently into the inner space and I resonate with the pain, the dissatisfaction, the things that are unhappy in there. And rather than fixing it or rather than analyzing it, I am willing to experience it. The beginning of all of these qualities is I am willing to experience what you experience. It's a very simple gesture. The gesture is I make a space here. I open some space here in the heart. And I allow something to come in here. And I allow what this feels to be felt by this body here. By this mind. I allow myself to be a resonance for what you are feeling. Now this translates also into meditation. Sometimes there are bits in here I don't want to feel. Many of us want to meditate to get away from things. Get away from stress, get away from unhappiness, get away from bad self-images, get away from distracted mind states, get away from discontent. And it works, but it doesn't work the way we think. Usually we need to accept before it changes. Meditators like to say, okay, I meditate and you change, okay? That's the deal. I meditate a little bit and you change a little bit. Actually, I like a better deal. I meditate a little bit and you change a lot, okay? But that doesn't seem to work like that. Most of the time it works like this. I meditate and I get more of the things I don't want to get. And because I allow myself to feel that, they then change. But before they change, you need to be able to receive them. So meditation, very simple, is about being more here rather than being more away. And when you're more here, you feel more. And when you feel more, you feel more of the things that are painful. So Brahmaviharas are helping us to allow to feel more of that which is painful. That's what karuna does as a meditator. So I am capable of feeling the strength of my posture. I am capable of feeling the stillness of my mind. I am capable of feeling the dexterity, the fluidity of my sati, of my mindfulness. And then I allow this to touch that part of me which is painful. Because I have a connection to my health, I can then touch what is painful, more deeply. This is the sequence. First, connect with the goodness, the strength, the sanity, the energy, the wakefulness, the clarity, and then you touch into the pain. With joy, it's easier. Connecting with that part of us which is joyful is generally easier. Sometimes it's a little forgotten. Sometimes we're even suspicious. We think, wow, I'm really used to bad things now. But this really feels good. Must be a mistake in there somewhere. I'm sure I'm getting a high bill any moment now. Or this is a misunderstanding. That was just a good bit, but now I'll be getting hit any moment. So sometimes we get a bit suspicious of that. But generally, connecting with that part of us which is jubilant is easier. Connected with this mudita part in meditation practice, there's things like gratitude, things like appreciation, things like wonder and amazement. These are all things, qualities very close to mudita. They uplift the mind. The word mudita comes from pamodati, making things glad, making something glad. It's not just gratification. Do not mistake joy and gladness with pleasant. Yeah. So some things that are pleasant make us feel glad and make us feel happy. But the pleasantness and the happiness are not necessarily the same. Some things can be pleasant without making us happy, yeah, without making the mind glad. It depends very strongly on our capacity to enjoy, on our capacity to appreciate. And sometimes we feel pleasant things and we don't appreciate. Yeah. So mudita strengthens our capacity to gratitude, to appreciation, recognition, and to participate in something, partaking into something. If we're practicing upekkha as meditators, we connect with an understanding that what has arisen in our heart has something to do with our past, has something to do with the conditions in our life. This is not self-blame. It doesn't mean that if you have a cancer diagnosis that you tell yourself, somehow I must deserve this. Somehow I must have done something really nasty and now I deserve a nasty illness. This is not Buddhism. This is just... this is ignorance. Yeah? This is some kind of stupid determinist thinking. It's not like that. It is... The conditions that have brought about suffering may be manifold. Some of it may be a lack of understanding. Some of it may be having to do with your childhood. Some of it may have to do with your lifestyle. Some of it may have to do with many, many other factors. We are part of systems, and all these systems influence us deeply. But when we acknowledge suffering and when we relate to that suffering with upekkha, we acknowledge that these conditions can be changed. We acknowledge that even an apparently hopeless condition holds the power for growth and transformation. We acknowledge that there is something good even in the bad. Yeah. We acknowledge that there are things we can do and there are things we can't do. And we are going not to fight against the circumstance that there are limits and boundaries to our influence and our powers. This is a difficult path. Remember the image of the mother with the adolescent child? It's not clear-cut. Yeah? How much support, how much parental imposition, and how much letting them free. Yeah? It's not a black and white history. There's a lot of grey in there, yeah? Which needs to be fine-tuned. As a practitioner of upekkha with a mind that starts to investigate what stops this mind to be free, I recognize there is healing and transformation possible even if I don't have an immediate solution. I know that sometimes under the experience of suffering, powerful growth can take place. It is the suffering that makes me more appreciative of the good things. Under the influence of suffering, and when I meet the suffering with upekkha, I do not react. Yeah. I acknowledge that I am not helpless. I bring qualities to this situation. I bring some strength, I bring some clarity. Even though it doesn't resolve right now, there is something that knows about conditions, that knows about the possibility of growth, of transformation. Something that does not believe that I am a victim or I am a god. Yeah. It's at the greatest distance from being a narcissist. Equanimity is the greatest possible distance from narcissism. Yeah. As a meditator, you see, you look at and you feel as impartially as possible what's taking place, and you see that you can learn from this. You remember that you do not have to repeat conditions that do not bring happiness. There is no condemnation. Even though the situation may be messy, the situation can be changed. If the conditions that have brought this situation about can be found, then these situations, these conditions can be changed. I am not my history. I do not have to reproduce my childhood or my marriage breakup or my neurotic addiction behavior or something like that. I do not have to be who I was always afraid I am. Upekkha is really hopeful. It says, I can learn. This mind here is capable of infinite happiness and infinite understanding. I remember all this when I say Upekkha. I look at the Buddha and say, look, he kind of looks half inwards because he knows his own mind and he a good statue, and he also looks half outward. Yeah. He's completely here. He hasn't lost his inner process and he's connected to the outer world. So, enough for me for the moment. Take up a meditation posture.